Okay, people on the recorder, I'm sorry I missed the first couple minutes of teaching. So we're in Job chapter 3 and 4. Okay, so Job chapter 3 is just, I mean, he's dealing with a lot of stuff. If you just quickly skimming it, let the day be darkness in verse 4. Verse 5 says, let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. It's all about like misery and darkness and death and all these things. He just keeps wishing or saying it would be better if he was never born. And so that's what's happening in chapter 3. So in chapter 4, which is what we're going to be reading here in just a second, the first few verses anyways, is Job's friend shows up and he hears Job saying all these things, and then Job's friend speaks to him for the first time. So the rest of the book is basically a back and forth. So one friend will speak to Job, and then Job will respond to that friend, and then the next friend will say something, and then Job will respond to that person. And so it's just a conversation between these three friends and Job. And so so Job lays out all these different things that he's struggling with. He's depressed because he's lost everything, and he's just like, what's the point of even being alive at this point? And so he's in this state of depression. And so maybe you guys have been in a situation where, you know, things seemed hopeless, or, you know, like things were not going the way that you thought they were going to go. Maybe you've lost somebody in your life, or you lost some relationship with somebody. Things weren't going the way that, you know, you hoped that they would go. And you find yourself in a position like this where you're just like, what else could happen? You know, everything is going badly. Like, you know, you're just kind of crying out, like you don't know what to do. And so he has these friends that show up, and they're hearing all this stuff coming from him. So maybe you've been in that position, or maybe you've been a friend of somebody who you've watched them going through something difficult, and it's like, how, like, your thought maybe would be, how can I help them? What am I supposed to say? I don't know how to handle this situation. I don't know what I'm supposed to say to this person. Okay, so we can kind of put ourselves in this situation, whether you've lived through it or been on the other side of it and seen somebody else living through it. Just kind of put yourself, this is kind of what's going on in these first few chapters. And so chapter 4, I'll just start in verse 1. I'm going to read through all the way through verse 9. So chapter 4, verse 1 says, then Eliphaz, the Temanite, that's his friend's name, answered and said, if we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? So in case you don't know what that means, those are like a lot of maybe words that you don't know what they mean, kind of all put together. So if we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? He's basically just saying, hey, is it cool if we talk to you? Like I want to talk to you about what's going on. Would that be helpful? Is that going to grieve you? Is it going to make it worse? Like, we're here. We came here to talk to you about what's going on. Is it okay if we talk to you? And then he says, but who can withhold himself from speaking? He's like, I want to help. Like, is it okay if we talk? And you know, I want to try to encourage you, or would you rather be left alone? You know, sometimes like you are dealing with somebody that, you're like, would you rather just be alone, or do you want to talk about it? And sometimes people aren't ready to talk about it or whatever. And so that's kind of how he starts off this conversation with Job. And then verse 3, it says, behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. And so, again, a little bit weird way of saying it, but he's saying, listen, Job, you've been there for a lot of different people. It says that you have instructed many, and you've strengthened the weak hands. It's like, you, Bryson. He's like, hey, you've been there for other people. You've encouraged people. And so he's trying to start him off by like building him up. You know, he's like trying to remind him, like, hey, Job, you've done a lot of good things for a lot of people. And then verse 4, he says, thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. He's like, there's been other people that have been in bad situations, and you've helped them out. You remember how that, you know, you remember how that worked. And so he's kind of trying to put him in a mindset like, you've dealt with people like this before, and now I'm trying to deal with you in that way. And so I want to encourage you that you know what the right things to say. You know how to, you know, help somebody through this. Job was a wealthy man, so maybe he's helped people financially. Maybe he's hired people on that were, you know, in need of work or money. He's maybe talked with people who have been going through difficult things. It says he was a great man, in the area that he was from. And so, you know, he's probably well known in this community. And so maybe people have come to him for instruction. This is me speculating. I don't know all of these things, but his friend is telling him like, hey, you've helped people that have been hurting before. You've helped people in difficult situations. And so now you're the one that is in a difficult situation. That's what he says in verse 5. But now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest, it toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. So he's like, you're now on the other side of this. And this is where it gets like not so great from his friend. He says in verse 6, is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? So he's like, hey, everybody who you know dies has sinned. Like, you know, all of us have messed up. And so he's switching this from, hey, I want to encourage you, and I want you to know that you are, you know, you've been through this from the other side before. So he's kind of like trying to start off by encouraging him, but then he's kind of starting to switch where he's like, hey man, everybody messes up, you know, like, and so he's switching it to where he's getting ready to tell Job, it's your fault that this stuff is happening to you. What have you done? Like, what sin have you done that God is punishing you in this way because of it? And so verse 8, it says, even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils they are they consumed. And so he's like, man, it's the principle that we talk about a lot. It's the principle of sowing and reaping, right? Like, if you plant corn in the ground, what's going to grow?
Corn.
Corn, right? Whatever you plant in your life, if you sow, like, good things, like, you know, if you're kind and you're encouraging and you're friendly and you're like outgoing and you deal with people well, it's likely that you're going to have those kind of people around you, and you're going to draw people to you because you're somebody that people want to be around. If you're always negative and you're always mean and, you know, you don't like, you don't really care about other people, you care about yourself, that's going to typically drive people away, right? The things that you sow in your life, are the things that you're going to reap in your life. And so if you sow, like, I want to have a relationship with the Lord, I'm going to spend my time, I'm going to sow my time in the Word of God. I'm going to read the Bible, and I'm going to see what it says, and I'm going to try to apply that in my life. Well, the result of that, what you're going to reap then, is you're going to reap a relationship with God. That's going to strengthen your relationship with Him. If you sow, like, I don't care about God, I don't really want to spend any time with Him, I'm not interested in the things of God, well, that's going to drive you further away from God, right? Because you're not investing your time into those things. You're not sowing into those things. And so it's the principle of sowing and reaping. And so his friend's telling him, hey, you must have done some really bad stuff, because what you're getting right now, what you're reaping right now, is a lot of bad stuff, right? This is like the worst situation maybe anybody's ever been in. All of their kids died in one day. I think, did he have 8 kids, I think? I don't know how many it was. It was a lot of kids. They all died in one day, right? And all these animals and stuff are dying off. I mean, to lose everything you own in one day, and your family, and his wife, basically, she didn't leave him officially, but she's like, you know, curse God and die. I'm done with you. You must have done something really bad, because now you've impacted our family, right? And so all this stuff is happening to Job, and his friend is reminding him, hey, man, if all this really, really bad stuff is happening, what really, really bad thing did you do? Because that's the principle that we see in life, is the things that you do, that's what you get, you know? And so he's reminding him of that. Now, if you look back in verse
7 sons, $3.
What is it?
7 sons.
7 sons and $3. Okay, he has 10 kids.
First
two.
Was that his first round of kids, or was that his second? Because he got multiplied
with more
afterwards.
This is
like the first.
Yeah, that was at the beginning.
I'm looking for
the ones that were swept away by the tornado.
Yeah, I know.
There's I was looking for the verse. I didn't write it down in my notes. I probably should have. But there's a verse in here where God's talking about Job, and he says that it's not through any fault of Job that this stuff is happening. God says that about Job. And so, you know, God has presented Job to Satan and said, have you considered my servant Job? He fears God. It says in chapter 2, verse 3, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. There it is, without cause. That's what I was looking for. So,
in chapter 1, verse 8, too.
Okay, I thought it was somewhere in chapter 2. That's what I was looking for. But I read that verse, but not the whole thing. So at the end of verse 2, he says, without cause. So, I mean, man, I would love it if God could look at my life and say that these things are true of me, that I'm a perfect and an upright man, one that fears God, one that eschews evil, like, you know, hates evil, turns away from evil. and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me or movest me against him to destroy him without cause. So even God is saying, all of this stuff is happening to Job without cause. Like, Job is a good guy. Like, God is saying that of him, not his friends or not his wife or not he himself saying it of him. God is saying, this guy's a good guy. None of this stuff that's happening to him is his fault. Now, of course, God's not telling his friend that. God's telling Satan that. They're having this conversation. But his friend in chapter 4 is saying, he must have done some really bad stuff. That's not accurate, right? That is wrong, huh?
Assuming.
Yeah, he's assuming that Job did something, because that is the principle that we see. It is easy for us to look at this and say, man, these friends are bad friends, right? They're not giving him good advice. They're saying things that are inaccurate. Like, these guys are wrong. But that's because we have the whole book and we can read the whole thing and we know what's happening. But if you just put yourself in the situation, I mean, these friends did show up for Job. They came from there. In chapter 2, it says in verse 11, now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place, right? So they hear about it. And they're like, man, we gotta get the game together. Let's all go be with Job, right? Let's sit with him and just, you know, try to talk him through these things, because our friend is hurting. So that, I think overall, like, some of the intentions, at least at the beginning, are good, and the friends do show up and they're trying to do the right thing, but they are assuming, like Nick said, they're assuming, what they think happened. And, they're inaccurate about that. I'm gonna skip some of this for time's sake, but flip over to, go to 2 Samuel chapter 2. You can hold your place in Job. If you didn't already do it, I'm sorry. 2 Timothy chapter 12. Or not 2 Timothy. 2 Samuel chapter 12.
473.
Page 473. 472 if you got a church Bible.
Are you at the beginning? Because the beginning is at 471.
Yeah, chapter 12, verse 1. Starting in verse 1.
471 then.
Okay, 471.
491.
All right, I was planning on reading this whole chapter. We don't have time to read the whole chapter, so I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit. But starting in verse 1, it says, and the Lord sent Nathan unto David, and he came unto him and said unto him, there were two men in one city, the one rich and the other poor. The rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing save one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up, and it grew together with him and with his children, and it did eat of his own meat and drank of his own cup and lay in his bosom and was unto him as a daughter. Okay, this is the story where Nathan goes to David after he has slept with Bathsheba, and he killed Bathsheba's husband because he wanted to take Bathsheba as his own wife. And so Nathan comes and he presents this story to David, and he's like, hey, there's this man and he has this sheep and he's raised this sheep up from a baby and it's the only one he has. It lives in his house with him and he treats it as if it's his daughter. And this king who has all these lambs to choose from has somebody coming to his house. And so he goes and sins and he takes this one lamb from this guy who has one lamb. He takes that one lamb and kills it and offers that to his friend to eat, rather than all of his own stuff. And David gets like super mad about this. And he's like, who's this guy? This guy needs to die for what he's done. This is not right. He needs to restore back what he took and all this stuff. And then at the end of that, Nathan tells him, thou art the man. And so he tells David, you're the guy that did that. You're the guy. You're the king. You can have pretty much any woman in the whole kingdom that you want. And you took the one that this guy had and then you killed him, so you could have his wife. And David's like instantly hit with conviction. He's like, oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought about what I was doing. And at the end of that, look at verse 14. This is Nathan talking to David. He says, howbeit, because by this deed, the stealing of Bathsheba, thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme. The child also that is born unto thee shall surely die. And Nathan departed unto his house, and the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bare unto David and it was very sick. Okay, so this is a little bit similar situation to what Job was going through, right? David, in this case though, David had sinned, obviously. He had stolen this man's wife and she's pregnant. He's having a baby with this lady, with Bathsheba. And Nathan comes to him and he's like, because of this, you've opened up the kingdom to attack from the enemies. And so because of this, this child is going to die. And so the next several verses, David's like, you know, praying, and he's just like falling apart, praying and asking that God would spare this child's life. And it says in verse 16, that David therefore besought God for the child. David fasted, and he went in and lay all night upon the earth. And the elders of his house arose and went to him to raise him up from the earth. But he would not, neither did he eat bread with them. So he's like, he's praying so hard, and he's not eating, and nobody can, like, you know, console this guy. He's just beside himself that this child is going to die. And then it goes on, and the child does end up dying. And then the guys, everyone's afraid to, like, hey, I don't want to go tell David. You go tell David. Like, I don't want to tell him that his child died. But David sees them talking, and he figures out, oh, the child's dead. So he goes and asks him, hey, did the child die? And they're like, yeah, the child died. And so he doesn't move on necessarily, but then he's able to go back to life, and they're like, man, we thought, you know, you were falling apart whenever the child was sick, and we thought you'd be so angry, and we didn't know what was going to happen when you found out that the child had died. And he's like, well, while the child was alive, it benefited me to pray to God, and maybe God would spare him or her. But now that the baby's gone, like, now I have to move on. Like, now there's nothing else I can do. Someday I will see that child again. He says that in verse 22. He says, and he said, while the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, who can tell whether God will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead. Wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall not go to him, or I shall go to him, but he shall not return unto me. And so, this story, this death of his child was a consequence directly of David's sin. And so it's a reminder for us that God takes sin seriously, right? I mean, the wages of sin is death, it says in the Bible. And we don't like to talk about those things very often, but, people die in their sin all the time. And the wages of the sin is death, and that's physical death, but also means eternity separated from God, right? The sin that we have separates us from God in our death. And so, it's a reminder, this passage applicationally for us is a reminder that, like, God takes sin seriously, and we should take sin seriously, especially in his leaders. Like, David's the king of Israel, and so God's reminding him, hey, I'm not playing around with this sin. You did something awful, right? You took this lady and you slept with her, and now you killed her husband. And, like, I can't just let that go unpunished. There's consequences to your actions. And David really never, I mean, he got over this. He moved past it. But, that was something David took with him the rest of his life, right? So going back to Job, Job is in a similar situation where his children have died, but this is not a result of his sin, in the case that it was with David. And so it's really easy for, like I said, for us to look at this and say, man, These friends are terrible. But the friends are just assuming that it is like it, you know, like it was with David. I mean, obviously this happened before David, but, you know, they're jumping to a conclusion, but what's the word I'm trying to think of? It's a reasonable conclusion to jump to, but in this case, they're wrong about what they're assuming. And so, the rest of this book goes on. We're going to skip in a lot of stuff, but the rest of this book goes on. And in chapter 5, Job, you know, goes back and talks back to his friend Eliphaz, and they have this discussion that continues the rest of the book. But his friends kind of continue to point out the fact that, Job, you must have done something wrong. And so there's a lot of things from this, from the book of Job, that we can apply in our life, but just a couple of things to think about. If you're going through something difficult, and it's not really if, but it's when. Like, all of us go through difficult things. Hopefully, we none of us ever go through something where we lose our families and, you know, everything we own all in one day. That's a terrible loss. But all of us are going to go through something. You all have already been through things. And I've been through things. We all go through things. But, it's a good reminder as we read through the book of Job. Why did God put the book of Job in the Bible? Why is God telling us about this man's tragic loss of his family, and then spend 30 chapters arguing with his friends about, you know, you must have done something wrong, and him saying, I didn't do anything wrong, but, you know, like, it's, why did God even record this story? Why is it even in our Bible? You know, like, Job is, it teaches us how to go through suffering. Like, there are things that are going to happen in this life that we're going to suffer through. Like, there's bad things that happen to us. There's bad things that happen around us. And so it's a good book to read if you're going through difficult times. You know, it's okay to be, like, distraught at those things. Job goes through a whole range of emotions in this book. And so there's a lot of things that happen to him. But he never forsook God. He never turned his back on God. He, despite what his friends and his wife are saying, he never cursed God. He never blamed God for the things that he was going through. He certainly wasn't, you know, happy in the situation. It was a lot of things to deal with, but he never cursed God. So we can trust God. That tells us in Proverbs that trust in the Lord, right, with all our heart, and lean not into our own understanding. In all our ways acknowledge him, and he will direct our paths. We don't know why we might be going through something. There's no way Job knew why he was going through what he was going through. Who would have guessed that God and Satan were arguing and talking about Job, and that's why Job was going through all the suffering? Like, there's no way Job could have known that. And there's also no way Job could have known that this story would be taught tonight, you know, 4,000 years after it happened, and that people could still be learning from his story. Like, there's no way that Job knew that. We don't know what God's, like, plan is, or why God allows things to happen, bad things or good things. Why does God allow those things to happen? We don't always have the answers. We might not ever have the answers. I don't think Job ever knew completely until he was in heaven, like, why all these things were happening to him, why he went through all these things. At the end of the story, he does get all of his stuff back, and he gets his kids back, and he gets more stuff than what he had before. Like, God restores everything that he had, but he didn't know that was going to happen. Like, I'm not saying that if you go through something bad that God's just going to fix it all if you trust in him. But God can do some things. God is working through you and through your situations to bring you closer to him, to allow other people from the outside to see, man, this guy is suffering, but he's not turning away from God. He's like seeking God through this situation. Like, people outside of your life can see that. There's all kinds of reasons why these things happen. If you're on the other side of things, you have a friend that's going through something difficult, don't be like Job's friends. Even if you think you know what's going on, and even if you think you know the answer to the problem, as men, as a husband, when my wife has a problem, I want to fix it. That's like the thing that guys want to do is, why didn't you just do this? Or you should have done this. Or why don't you try this next time? And most of the time, the wives don't want to hear our fixes. They just want us to hear that they have a problem, and they want us to, like, understand. And, man, that really sucks. I'm sorry that you're going through that. And just listen. Yeah. And so, if you have a friend that's going through difficult times, just be there and listen. Just like see what's going on. Don't assume that you know how to fix their problem. Even if you think you know how to fix their problem. And the last thing I have is, there's a bunch of verses that deal with suffering in the Bible. There's a ton of them. I wrote a few down. 2 Timothy 3:12, 2 Corinthians 1:3-4, Hebrews 13:5, Isaiah 41:10. I know you guys are not writing these down, but if you listen to the recording, they're on there. There's hundreds of verses in the Bible that deal with these kinds of things that, God will not forsake us. God will not leave us. God doesn't allow us to be tempted above that which we're able, but will make a way of escape. Like, there's all kinds of verses that you can, like, hang your hat on, so to speak. But if you read the book of Job, it is sometimes a little bit of a difficult read. There's a lot of things. Maybe you read through the whole book and you're like, I don't know what half of that was talking about. But it teaches us how to go through suffering and how to go through difficult times. And, you really only can go through those difficult times, and seek God if you're saved. And so, if you're not saved, if you don't have a relationship with the Lord, then that's step number one. That's where we need to start. And, Job had a relationship with God. He knew, who he could turn to even when things were difficult. And so, if you don't have a relationship with God, maybe you don't know where to turn when things get difficult. And that's why people turn to drugs and alcohol and to bad relationships and bad situations. And that's why things turn out that way a lot of the time, is they don't have anywhere else to turn. They don't have any hope. And so if you're saved, if you have a relationship with the Lord, you have hope. You have, access to, God, and you can, like, turn to him instead of, these other things. What'd you say?
Relief.
Yeah, you have relief.
Drugs and stuff to get relief from their pain or whatever.
Right. Yeah, and we have that relief and that hope through Christ and not through the things that the world has to offer. So we're 5 minutes over. Let's pray, and we'll be done. Dear God, thank you for this day, God. Just thank you for the story of Job and this book, God. I can't even begin to imagine the things that Job was going through, God, and I can't even imagine some of the things people in this room have gone through, God. And all of us have difficult times and tribulations that we're going through, God. But I pray that feel like this message would just be encouraging and maybe something that doesn't apply to us right now, but maybe we can fall back on whenever things do get difficult, and we can go to the book of Job, and we can learn from the way that Job suffered and the things that he went through, and God, just that we can ultimately we can trust in you, and that you know better than we know, God, and we don't even have to know the reasons that we're going through the things we're going through, God, if we just put our trust in you and know that you know what's best for us, and you can see the big picture better than we can. And so, God, I thank you for this book. I thank you for everyone that's here tonight, God. I thank you for just a time of fun and fellowship and a time in your word. God, I pray for the rest of this week. And this weekend, guys, we have our Friendsgiving. I pray that you would just bring people over, help us to have a good, fun time of fellowship there. And God, I also just want to lift up Thanksgiving next week, God, and just pray for people as they travel and see family and friends and things. God, I pray that you would just help us to just remember the things that we do have to be thankful for. That's another thing we can do, God, if we're going through difficult times, is we always have things that we can be thankful for, and we always have things that maybe we take for granted, God, but help us to just pay attention to those things and keep our eyes peeled for those things. And just thank you for everything you do for us. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
I think that conversation might have to happen. Oh, man, I'm sorry that we...